All right, folks, this is Rabble Rousing, Rich Bergeron.
And psychic Tom Tadger. Crystal ball, raring to go.
Yeah.
Good, Tom. Come on, test your
I'm on tonight, buddy.
Okay, good.
So, big news is obviously the super fight has been made. Canelo Alvarez and Triple G. The bad news for Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather fight fans, Dana White comes out and spits out that, hey, they stole our date. They picked the exact same date that Mayweather and McGregor is supposed to happen. And, you know, the Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. fight was no real surprise, but it was kind of a surprise. Tom sent me the link that he blamed his trainer's strategy, Chavez, more than himself. That was kind of strange. I haven't seen that in a while. You know, it's my trainer's fault.
And you know, here's what I would say regarding that. Hey, Rich, you fought, I fought. Sometimes you go in there and what you're planning to do is not working. It happens. You come in there with a strategy and sometimes it doesn't work. Now, as a world-class championship caliber fighter, you know, now, can some of the, you know, blame go at the feet of the trainer? Yeah, if the trainer, if you're in the corner and the trainer is not, you know, giving you the instructions and maybe change things up, okay, fine. But in your mind, you're like, yo, you're telling me to do this, and that shit ain't working. I'm gonna dance with what brought me. I'm gonna, you know, with what brought me to the dance, and I'm gonna, you know, maybe try to be aggressive, or I'm gonna try to dig the body. I'm going to try to stand in toe-to-toe. I'm not going to try to box with this guy or, you know, yeah, maybe the game plan was to box or whatever it was, and I'm just saying that. But sometimes you got to sit there and say, you know what? I, as a championship-level fighter, need to change something. That's the key, what you just said right there. If this was at the lowest amateur levels, you could understand it. But you should have had at least a plan B, maybe even a plan C. I mean, one of the things that's in a fighter's control is your, in addition to your training, is your strategy and tactics and your alternatives. Well,
Canelo,
if this goes wrong, we'll do this.
Canelo, too, is a very simple fighter. I mean, his 90% of his goodness, his skill is defense. And he's a both-hands-up fighter, not just the one-hands-up like I advocate all the time, one hand up by the chin. He's usually both hands up. And the one punch that could have been the equalizer for Chavez, I don't even think I saw him throw more than a handful of, was an uppercut. Just like Anthony Joshua hits Klitschko with, you know. And he wasn't throwing the good punches. And he just, you know, he tried to use his jab more than anything. And even when it wasn't working, he just kept trying to, you know, get that to start something. And then he wouldn't come in and be aggressive at all. He just would let one punch send him back, and then Canelo would go all over him. And just, it wasn't a very exciting fight at all. And, you know, that's what makes me think Triple G is going to destroy Canelo. Because
I wouldn't
just
go that far now. And because Canelo is a competent fighter, I think, you know, sometimes when you have a dance partner that's unwilling to dance, it's hard to look good, you know? I mean, it was like a sparring session. And you know what? Being a Philadelphia fighter, I take offense to calling it a sparring session, because I had sparring sessions better than that. And I was a master. But what was funny, because, you know, last weekend being my dad's birthday, I asked, I said, Dad, would you like me to order the fight for you? And he goes, you know what? Maybe my dad was feeling something. He might have had Tom Psychic crystal ball, because he goes, nah, he goes, I just can't see spending $50 or whatever the, you know, pay-per-view tag was on that fight. And I said, okay, Dad, I can appreciate that. I was going to order for you for your birthday, but, you know, whatever. So that night, we're sitting there on the couch, and he's watching whatever, and I'm fiddling around on my phone. Somebody goes on Facebook Live, and they're basically in their living room.
Yeah, I saw a couple of people doing
that. And I'm like, son of a bitch. I watch, and I'm like, hey, Dad, Canelo just won the first round. Did you watch the fight? I'm like, yeah. So, a round or two later, we're sitting young seven, and we're watching it together, a crystal clear picture, and these, and what made it better was the commentary of these guys watching the fight. You don't want to say anything you can say that they were whatever. Okay, by the way they were talking and their dialect, you could tell they were black. But they were, like, they were sitting there saying things like, "What, we need to go out and smoke some weed," you know? Cracking jokes the whole time. I'm like, they're more entertaining than the fight.
Yeah.
And then the next joke that came out on Sunday was going all over the internet. I don't know if you guys saw it yet. If you didn't, I have a picture of it on my computer. But it's a picture of Maury Povich. And he goes, "The DNA results are in, and you are not the father." And you see Chavez Sr. cheering.
Oh, no.
Now, here is where I am going to put the test to Tom's crystal ball. And after I ask him, then I'm going to explain why. Tom, apparently a few spots have been mentioned for this fight on September the 16th. I've heard Las Vegas at that new T-Mobile Arena. I've heard possibly Jerry World, Texas Stadium, Jerry Jones's billion-dollar palace. I heard somebody say Dubai. I don't know. I don't think that would sell at all because you wouldn't get that heavy Hispanic population there. Where do you see this fight landing?
Dubai.
You know, my first gut feeling is Las Vegas, but something's telling me no.
Oh, Tom, check the crystal ball. And the reason I say that is, that's the weekend of my birthday. I've already started pricing flights. The tornado.
Okay, have they determined the site yet?
They haven't. But if it's in Vegas, I'm already looking at package deals through American Airlines. And I'm looking at some of the deals. Like, when I went to the Pacquiao fight a few years ago, we stayed at the Flamingo because my one friend had comp rooms there. So I paid for my flight. I think I paid $100 for 3 nights at the hotel. But looking at package deals, and I put in September 15th, Friday to fly out, fly home on Monday, September 18th. And with those deals with the hotels, the Flamingo was like $650 for the flight and 3 nights.
Wow.
Yeah. Now the Bellagio, I think, was like $800. Caesar's Palace was like $800 or $900. Still, that's real good. And it was making me think, back 20 years ago, when I was a junior at Lock Haven University, one of my college teammates that year, who I'm still very good friends with, he was the ring announcer for that, not the ring announcer, the timekeeper for that fight card my trainee was supposed to be on a few months ago. But he was a paralegal. His father was a lawyer. His family had some money. So, being a big boxing fan that he was, that year, it was probably around March, and we were getting ready for the regionals, and we're in Lock Haven, so he had gone out the day, and he had bought the Philadelphia Inquirer. Because you don't do internet searches like you do now. You don't even think there was a Google yet, right? So, he's got the Philadelphia Inquirer, and I forget what section he got at. I forget if it was like classifieds or whatever. But I'm like, "What are you doing, Fred?" He goes, "I'm looking for package deal for Vegas for late June." I said, "What are you doing that for?" He goes, "Because you can get a real good package deal at the hotel for only a couple $100. And he goes, "Because they want to get you to go out there and gamble." I don't gamble. But I'm going to Tyson Holyfield. He was there for the fight bite.
Nice.
Yeah. So that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking at package deals. You know, a hotel, flight. Me and my dad are going to go out. And, you know, hey, I'll gamble a little bit. When I went to the Pacquiao fight, I broke even.
Nice.
I flew out there on a Friday. I flew home on a Monday. I broke even on my gambling. That's not too bad. I was ahead about $60-$80, but I got to the airport early on my flight home, and I was sitting there playing the slots in the airport.
Slots will get you every time.
That I was ahead.
That's Las Vegas slots. Right, Tom?
You know, I keep flashing on Los Angeles. Check for that, okay? Now, hold me to this. But okay. Something tells me about this. This is just my gut feeling, all right? I'm putting it on the line here, okay? Because, you know, Las Vegas seems the obvious choice. Something's telling me no. I don't know what. So, California, here we come. Or maybe Texas would be second. But again, that's so logical. And I'm thinking with that giant Mexican population in Southern California, and Triple G has a fan base there too, it's kind of a win-win. I mean, not that it wouldn't be in Las Vegas, but this, I just think that LA would, well, we'll see.
Whoa, okay. You heard it from Tom
Never
first.
Never talking to you again, though.
Well, he's a little more expensive, huh? You could always land in Vegas and then drive to LA.
I hope I'm wrong.
Tony, you could always land in Vegas, rent a car with unlimited mileage, and then drive to Los Angeles.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, that's only about a 5 to 5 hour drive, depending on how fast you drive.
Get a fast convertible. we'll see. Anyway, so the funny thing about the Canelo GGG matchup is that Dana White thinks that, you know, they basically stolen their date for Mayweather McGregor. And I actually did read something about Oscar De La Hoya coming out and telling Floyd to forget about Conor McGregor.
Just
kind of funny.
You know what? When I was at work and I you know, on one of my breaks, and I was thinking, because that's when we were going back and forth on the email between us about, you know, setting up our profiles and everything. And they're saying, hey, do one article a week or whatever. That's my first article. And it's going to be like Mayweather McGregor, you know, basically just the hunt. And then I'm just going to destroy, you know, what would be the fight about it. Because I think it would be, you know, just, if they do a boxing match, just a tremendous mismatch and, you know, not non-competitive. And, you know, so that's going to be one of my rants.
Yeah, that's selling the hype of it more than it's worth. And it's going to disappoint a lot of people when it goes one-sided and, you know, McGregor looks like a piece of crap. But, you know, you never know. He could train like you wouldn't believe, but actually there was a story out this week that there was some twittering back and forth, like Donald Trump, I guess, and Lomachenko went out there on Twitter and said something about McGregor, but then he kind of pulled it back, saying he didn't want to fight him, but he'd love to spar him to get him ready for McGregor, I mean Mayweather, so...
Well, you just gotta wonder if the money's gonna be there, though. I just keep reading so much about this that maybe these demands, like McGregor, $75 million, you know, Floyd, $100 million, don't know if the money's there.
That's absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, what we're seeing happening too, we've got so many fighters now that, under the Fertittas, would not say a word. Now, all of a sudden, these guys are coming out of the woodwork, and they're all saying, fuck the UFC, you know? And they're not just, like, figuratively saying it anymore. They're saying, fuck you. Which reminds me of one of my only pinned tweet right now on ZionSucks.com on Twitter. And it's the open FU to Dana White that I wrote about his assessment of Holly Holm risking a title against Misha Tate. I thought it was just, you know, she wanted to fight the best, and she signed the contract, so you knew what she was doing, and Dana White came out after the fact and said that was stupid of her to do that, and it's stupid of her manager. So, you know, when Ally Quinta went on a little bit of a rampage last week, I was thrilled, but now we've got Luke Rockhold taking it a step further, because he's apparently very pissed off about the whole situation with George St. Pierre having to fight. Wait until November, I guess. I don't know what they're talking about, but
I don't know if you caught the latest news, but apparently now the GSP fight with Bisping is off.
Oh, it's off now.
It is off because Dana's comment was that they're tired of waiting on GSP saying, you know, dictating everything and saying, well, September, then it was October, now it's November. And he just said, hey, it looks like GSP won't even be fighting this year. So I guess that's out now. So maybe Rockhold will get his rematch. Huh. Or Romero.
Romero, yeah. Well, that's what Anderson Silva said this week. He went off on Dana White personally and called him like the Almighty or something. I don't know, crazy stuff. But yeah, he just basically, here's it. That's the Lomachenko stuff. I'll get to that. Yeah, he basically said the almighty Dana White and was talking trash about him and saying, you know, he doesn't know what people go through, and basically, in a nutshell, said that you have to have Yoel Romero fight for the title. You know, that's your only option at this point. So, this, you're getting so many people coming out of the woodwork, it's like they're sensing that these new people that are in charge do not give a shit. They're like really screaming out there that, hey, you know, you guys need to care a little bit about what's going on. Stop making freak show fights. And stop, you know, treating people the way you're treating them. Like, you know, as much as you could knock the Fertittas for being corrupt casino magnates, you know, they had a passion for the thing. And it seems like the corporate people that are in charge now do not give a shit about what they're driving here. It's just like a new sports car. So I think you're seeing a lot of these UFC guys say the same, right? And, you know, fuck you for trying to pull this over on us, because it ain't working right now.
Yeah, Rich, I don't know if you got a chance to read that article I linked you.
I did. Yes.
It's just a rudderless ship, and then deciding about these freak fights. What they're going to do. It's really interesting.
Yeah, Rockhold really went off. He says, you know, all these guys are going to Ariel Helwani, which I think is hilarious because, you know, the UFC had that little hissy fit with him and they threw him out of that one fight and revoked his passes and everything. And because he did like a hard hitting interview with Rory McDonald. And so it kind of was the first time in a long time where they stamped a guy as a member of the resistance, you know, from the media. And all these guys now are coming to Ariel Helwani to do interviews. Rockhold says, you can't predict anything these days, so the UFC is just chasing to pay off a debt, really, is what they're doing. Trying to put these mega fights together that don't make sense. I don't know. You never know what they're going to do these days. Who knows?
And especially with that article pointing out that Dana White doesn't seem to have the passion that he did 10 years ago, and with the money he has, it would be tough to keep that same passion. So there's a void.
Here we get to the four-letter words. If they're not putting an interim title on the line, or if they're not making Bisping fight a contender, I'm not fighting anybody, said Rockhold. And so should the rest of the division, too. What's the point without me, Musasi, Yoel, and Whitaker? I think everyone should just stand their ground and say, fuck you. Put a title on the line or else fuck you. Don't even have a division. So there's him saying fuck you. And it's, he says the middleweights need to step up and hold their ground. Which is kind of like union talk to me, you know, organizing. These fighters, like, it's subconsciously organizing themselves by doing this. That's the funny thing about it, is they're using their own celebrity in a way to bring attention to the issue. And,
it really is fascinating that this stuff has developed since the Fertitta brothers left.
Yeah, they still have a tiny piece of it, from what I hear, but these corporate people are really getting it thrown at them. right now.
So the question is it just coincidence, or is there something we don't know?
Well, I think what happened is they got sucked into this deal as like, oh, you know, this is really worth all this money, and then they're in debt for it. So they really can't invest anything, and it's stagnant. It's going to get stagnant long enough where Bellator is going to start picking up all the unhappy people, and then you're going to really have a head-to-head like Pride versus UFC was before the UFC bought Pride and, you know, collapsed them.
And furthermore, I guess the pay-per-view numbers are really down for many reasons. One of them is a lot of young folks really don't see the sense in paying $60 or $70 for something they can find online for free. And we've got, you know, that old issue keeps coming up about the watered-down talent, the smaller divisions, the women's divisions. There's just so many problems now. Well, see how it shakes out.
Yeah, and there's another part of the Rockhold interview that's got some more four-letter words, so if you got kids around, block their ears. Says, I go put on a performance and I beat one of the best guys in the world. I mean, there's no path to anything, so what's the fucking point? There's no point to stay in this division or, fuck, I mean, in this company. If it's just money fights, I'll go do that somewhere else. I mean, you can let me go from my contract and I'll go fight big money fights somewhere else, but I'm here in this company to fight the best guys in the world and to win titles. If there's no path to that, I'm out. Let me go. And you're seeing more and more of that too. I mean, Anderson Silva's threatening to retire last week if they don't give him an interim title shot with Romero. And, you know, so the whole idea of these guys waiting to fight, there's especially when you have a big lull like that. I mean, what else are the guys going to do? They're going to try to make the news by saying, hey, well, you know, give me a fight. You know, throw me a curveball, you know. Give me something good.
And the problem is, where are the superstars? Brockbuster's gone. Ronda's gone. Conor may be in the boxing world. He may be gone. The Diaz brothers are holding out for more money. Who do they have?
We do have a big card this weekend for the UFC, which is pretty good. We'll get to that a little bit later, but it's been pretty intense back and forth. And here's the Lomachenko stuff. He recently actually sparred with TJ Dillashaw, who's one of the coaches on The Ultimate Fighter. So he has worked with some mixed martial arts people. And he says he used to win sambo in multiple grappling tournaments when he was younger. He asked his fans on Twitter, should I try fighting in the UFC? What do you think? And he tweeted it right at Conor McGregor. And then somebody texted back to him, you're the best boxer in the world maybe ever. Why change course now and go in the UFC? And he asked, but has anyone had a world title in both boxing and the UFC simultaneously? You know, and then he just kind of later backtracked. He says, oh, it's a joke. Anyway. That's just a joke. But he does give McGregor some props. He said he's funny and very smart for this business. And he offered to spar him. He said, I send this message for him, but I'm not talking about an official fight. I say, have a boxing test. If we make a sparring session, I think it would be great for him because I can show him boxing skills. I said, yeah, he's your next sparring partner there, Conor. Good luck. We also had another big landmark for boxing this weekend. We had a woman fight in Nevada go 3-minute rounds.
I heard that.
Yeah, that was big news this week. Big stuff. History, I just don't have the details. Oh, and here's the, before we switch completely to boxing here. Anderson Silva slams almighty Dana White, says he shot himself in the foot. This was on Bleacher Report. And he says, this is Anderson Silva's quote, "Now the Almighty One, who everyone knows who it is, has to calm down and put Yoel Romero to fight. Now he has to put Yoel Romero to fight, and there is no excuse. He has no excuse to give. He has to put Yoel Romero to fight because Yoel Romero is the number one in the ranking, and Michael Bisping said he's ready to fight. So there's no more talk. He has to put Yoel Romero to fight, period. Like to bed, to fight." That's funny. That's his exact quote, though, in the translation. He says, "In a way, I helped a fellow fighter, and I think that's what we should do. It's not about cursing at Dana White or fighting the UFC brass. It's not. It's using what they're doing to us back against them. Dana, the Almighty, shot himself in the foot." "I don't have any personal problem with him, but the problem is when it affects the fighters. When it affects the fighters that leave home for 3 months to train, who train hard, who train injured, and who make it all happen. We are the ones who make the show happen, not him. No. He sits there and only books fights and stays there, brother. The truth is that this is a big joke that is happening, and it has to stop." And this is the kicker here, the big one. "The UFC is not a sport. MMA is a sport. The UFC is just a brand that produces MMA fights." And guess what his sign-off was? "One for all and all for one." I mean, considered by many to be one of the, if not the pound-for-pound best MMA fighter on the planet overall in his career, especially if you look just in his prime years as champion. Saying stuff like that, threatening retirement and foaming at the mouth, really, here at this point, I think is a big flag that tells you these guys need to lock it down and do something here. Start investing a little bit more rather than just paying off debt and make stuff happen. But apparently, Dana White's not helping things with some of his comments now. Really getting people rubbed the wrong way. And, you know, he's supposed to be getting the big money right now. He's a lot of that debt. He's getting double digits in millions right now to do his job. So way more than any one fighter will make in a year, typically, unless you include all their big sponsorships and all that. Crazy stuff. And then there's the big Sports Illustrated news today that I know Tony's going to like. Boxing is winning.
Yeah.
Boxing is winning, Tony.
Winning?
It's winning.
I love it.
It's beating MMA.
Really?
Yes. Yes. Tom, it's true. You didn't predict it.
Everything goes in cycles. Well, at least in boxing, we may get some of the fights we've been waiting on.
Yeah, I mean, that's the whole thing. I mean, Lampley was saying that he feels that the heavyweight division's really back and revised. We'll see about that. I mean, historically, Americans have never warmed up to British fighters that much. So we'll see how that shakes out. But just with the middleweights, I mean, hey, how many years have we been waiting on Triple G and Canelo?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, a couple of years.
You know, they're doing some different things, though. Like, you know, we got Al Haymon in the picture doing a lot of free fights, and some of these guys are now transitioning with Showtime. They've got a real close relationship with Showtime. And now that you've got more eyes on it, I think a lot of people are starting to fall back in love with it. So if they make these big fights and keep people involved and keep people interested in it, it could definitely surpass MMA right now.
And more free fights on regular television. That's so important.
I'm excited that those Tuesday nights I get to watch fights, or Friday nights I get to watch fights. Like, hey, this is fights open, I get to watch fights. What do you get?
Yeah. And a lot of people don't have HBO and Showtime. They just don't. You know, it's, well, it's on Showtime, yeah. So a lot of people just, I mean, I'm not a movie guy. I may have to wind up getting it to watch boxing, but I mean, I'm not into movies. So let's get it on regular television. Sure would help.
And I don't know what channel it was on, but Euriorkis Gamboa, I said he was fighting last week, fighting a guy that I thought was kind of an opponent. Well, guess what? He lost.
19-1 odds.
That's butt
kicked.
How about
that? Oh, my God.
And complained of dizziness and everything after the fight.
You guys are going to get a kick out of this. As I was saying, every week I do that step challenge with Amy, who I train, and a couple of her friends. So we were, you know, pretty much neck and neck going into Friday. And I'm not letting one of my knees beat me. Just the way I am. I'm that competitive. So after I got home from work, which I walked 10 laps that day at work, which was about 5 miles, 3 miles at lunch, and then about a mile on each break. Then I went to the gym and I did 20 rounds, 10 rounds shadowbox, 10 rounds bag. So by the time I got home, I was already in the 20,000 step range. I'm watching the fights and I am pacing back and forth because I had so much caffeine in me that I was like a rocket ship. At the end of every round, I would walk up the steps 2 or 3 times as I'm watching this fight. And then the fight's going on and I'm getting hyped. Because I see that Rocky Balboa taking to a guy that at one time was considered one of the top 3 or 4 fighters in the world. And he's bringing it to him. And when he dropped him, I'm like, you know what? This fight ain't. He's got him. He's got his number, you know? Because, hey, talented as Balboa was, you could tell he was making mistakes. And this kid was landing full shots, and Balboa's never had a good chin. So, at the end of it all, I got my trainee messaging me, like, would you go to bed? And I'm like, no, I'm walking, and I'm watching the fights. I ended up going 37,000 steps that day, and watched 19-1 underdog kick out a former highly touted world champion.
Now, did you guys notice a former Olympic gold medalist?
No, I didn't see it.
Sometimes that's your ticket, and sometimes it ain't. If it were, the guy that beat Roy Jones Jr. in 1988 would have had a great pro career. Can you guys name him? I can't.
Yeah, he was from Seoul, South Korea. That's all I know. I think Kim was in his name.
Yeah, and he was an Olympic gold medalist. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
So, I'll tell you right now, here's another one. You go back, tell me this. I'm going to go back to 1984. Who had a better professional career? Irell Biggs, the gold medalist, or Evander Holyfield, the bronze medalist? I'm not, hey, discount the fact that he got ripped off from the disqualification. Who had a better career?
Yeah, exactly.
One's in the Hall of Fame, the other one's mostly well known for Mike Tyson saying he was crying and screaming like a girl.
Yeah. That's
not
true. How true. So, I mean, I'm not saying that it's completely useless or not prestigious, but there's so much more in the pro ranks. You've had the amateur.
Who was the outstanding boxer of the 76 Olympics? Wasn't it Howard Davis Jr.?
Right. He was, I mean, that was such a great team, but yeah, Howard Davis, I mean, we had Spinks and Leonard and Leo Randolph, but yeah, Howard Davis Jr. was probably the highest rated.
Oh, shit, I think Rain Man has entered the room. Boxing Rain Man is here. All right, ask him another question. Euriorkis lost to a guy named Robinson Castellanos. His record was 23-12. Euriorkis coming in at 26-1. Also, that same night, Jesus got a loss. Jesus M. Rojas, 24-1-2. Got TKO'd, poor guy. By Abraham, another Bible name. Abraham Lopez, 22-0-1. TKO'd, won the WBA, NABA featherweight title there. We also had a couple undefeated guys on the undercard at middleweight. Yamaguchi Falco goes to 13-0 over Morgan Fitch, who goes to 18-1-1.
Well, what do you guys think of that banter between Teddy and Bernard? I think they make a pretty interesting team, and it was kind of funny because Teddy kept saying, A lot of times it's complicated, and this with that Lopez fight, it's not complicated. He does good on the outside. He doesn't do good on the inside. Keep it simple. I kind of enjoyed the two of them. I like that team.
You know what? So did I. You have two guys there with very large personalities, but they mesh well. So, you know, they might butt heads a little bit, but it's like an entertaining banner. I could see those two. If you want to get a good laugh, those two would be good professional wrestler commentators. Yeah, I can see that. You know, set one up as like the face commentator who goes for the good guys. Set one up as the heel commentator who goes for the bad guys, and let them battle it out a little bit. You know, because they both they had that charismatic personality.
Would you believe James Toney is having his last fight this weekend, Tony?
Excuse me?
Would you believe James Toney is having his last fight this weekend? On Saturday the 13th, he's fighting Mike Shepard, 24-20-2.
Mike Shepard out of West Virginia. Mike Shepard.
So you got to get a ticket to Ypsilanti, Michigan. The Eastern Michigan Convocation Center, if you want to see this one.
Wasn't he from Ypsilanti?
So he's going back to his roots for his last
fight. Mike Shepard. I remember I was ringside when he got knocked out by the Black Rhino. Was Clifford Etienne, the one that got knocked out by Tyson in the first round. Yeah, and Steve Smoger was the referee for that part.
Oh, nice.
That was interesting. Mike Shepard,
You're calling me the Rain Man of boxing?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I'm cheating a bit. That was a local card here.
So James comes in at 76 wins to go with 10 losses and 3 draws.
First round, and he just got caught in the second round. But, yeah, I can't believe he's still around. Wow, it's amazing. Yeah, the fight was
Well, it's an old school fight, I guess. Both guys been around the block.
I remember one fighter, and was fighting, and I was like, wait a minute, this guy's still fighting? I'm like, I remember him when I was a teenager. Well, same thing with James Toney, technically, because I started watching James Toney, I think I was 14, maybe? 15? 15, I think I was when he won the world title.
I'm just laughing because I found the mismatches of the weekend, and it's top of the bill here in Meridian, Mississippi. The names are great, too. Light heavyweight Cena Egbeko. He's coming in at 16-1. His opponent is 1-6, and his name is Christian Bruffy Holmes. 1-6 is his record. That's a light heavyweight. Then you got a welterweight fight, Steve Morris. Javon Barnes coming in undefeated 10-0, fighting Charles Philip Hammack. This is H-A-M-M-A-C. Hammack. He's 4-28 is his record. Going against a 10-0 fighter. Mississippi. Yeah, James Toney, I guess he's going to go out with a win. He's picked the right opponent. But, he's fighting...
Wouldn't that be a miracle if Shepard could pull it off? I wonder what the odds are on that.
I don't think he's getting paid enough.
Do a little Google here, see if there's even making book on that one. Huh? Mike Shepard.
That kind of reminds me of the fact that I just found out last night that Bartolo Colon is still out there pitching.
Yes. You know what? I made over Bartolo Colon a few weeks ago. He's with the Braves now. I hated him for all the Mets because one, he would always stifle the Phillies. He could barely throw above 83 miles an hour, and he was fat. I'm a big guy. Jesus Christ, he's 40 years old and he's 500 pounds. You know, we can't. get so mad. Billy's with the Braves, and my one friend was coming over 2 weeks ago, who unfortunately, for anybody that hangs back with us, he's about as equally sarcastic as I am. That's not necessarily a good thing. So, he's coming over, meeting me at my house, and right before he got there, Phillies are playing the Braves, Cologne's pitching, and the Phillies pitcher was up. So you're not expecting a fast guy on the base, a fast guy at bat, but he hit one that actually popped over the first base, and the first baseman snared it behind the base. And this pitcher, who is 25, 26 years old, lost a foot raised to the bat to Bartolo Colon. I said, you know, you ought to go hang your head in shame.
Right.
Colon could have been 10 feet to the bat. You still should have beat him. The guy's fat and old. And not to have anything against the guys that are fat and old, but...
Yeah, I was on the Red Sox game the other night. They mentioned it, and I haven't watched the Red Sox game in a long time, and I just happened to be flipping back and forth between that and the Celtics, and they're talking about Bartolo Colon pitching in his 40s. The last time I remember seeing Bartolo Colon live was when he pitched for the Cleveland Indians, and he was on 3 days rest, and he was part of a 27-run game for the Red Sox. They shelled him. It was like 8-0 after the first two innings. It's unbelievable. I was there. It was a wild card playoff game. It was best game I ever went to. You know, I paid $100 for every seat. Anyway, crazy stuff. So that's pretty much most of the boxing news for this week. There's not a whole lot of other fights going on. No big names, because of course you know you got Mother's Day here. Sunday. So, most people are going to family places for that, not planning a big Vegas vacation.
Yeah, not this weekend. I'm planning a Vegas vacation, but for September. Maybe. If time's right, I won't be going to Vegas.
Hey, I said I hope I'm wrong, okay?
Did you guys happen to see the complete BS profile I wrote on myself for the Sports Rant?
I haven't seen it yet. They sent me the link so I can look at it.
I'm gonna send it to you guys. You guys, I put it on my Facebook as well. Amy's friend, I trained her friend. She wrote it. She's like, "Wow, your accomplishments and this and that." And I told her, I said, "I'm gonna fire the person that wrote the bio on me." Waiting for her to say, "You did a really good job." It was me, but I wrote it in the third person. But I was gonna say, I'm gonna fire this person because he refused to acknowledge my boyish charm and my stunning good looks.
Well, you know, I've talked about somebody else in the combat sports world who shares part of your nickname. They call her the Tiny Tornado. Tisha Torres, she was a former Ultimate Fighter contestant, fights in the UFC. That's some bad news if you ever hope to have a Big Tornado, Tiny Tornado reunion. I don't know if you've seen pictures of her. She looks pretty nice, but I just found out over the weekend that, over this last week, I should say, that she and Raquel Pennington are actually dating. So she bats for the other team, Tony.
the tiny tornado. Boy, there goes my fantasy crush.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
You know, two tornadoes in the same place is never good anyway, but...
I can still dream.
I don't know if that's going to happen, but I only found this out because apparently there was, you know, one of the racy stories going around about some phones being hacked, and Raquel Pennington was one of the girls who had her naked pictures splattered all over the internet. So, yeah, that's another thing going around Twitter. But, yeah, that was her and a couple other fighters. But Nothing of the tornado. I couldn't find a tiny tornado. Nothing on her, but Raquel was out there. And I saw one video of them two doing workouts together. Oh, my God. That's kind of funny. They're doing sit-ups while they're kissing each other and everything. Like, oh, jeez. I guess they're really out. They're really out. Anyway, wrestling. We haven't talked about pro wrestling in a long time, and I got an excuse to talk about it this week. The smaller circuits, not so much the WWE, but, you know, the area of the WWE, actually. Tom Lawler, he has a real good name for wrestling. Filthy is his nickname. Filthy Tom Lawler. And he's on suspension right now, 2-year drug suspension by the UFC, and it's basically because of a... you know, this banned chemical that actually is used to treat some diseases or something, anyway. But he's now getting into pro wrestling somehow, even though he's still under contract with the UFC, he can do pro wrestling. So I don't know how he's worked this out, but I thought this was unheard of, except in Bellator. But on Friday, he's going to face this guy named Kyle O'Reilly, one of the most respected wrestlers on the independent circuit today, according to this article. And Tom Lawler is 33 years old. He says, a lot of guys are jealous of me. I'm already getting bookings they can't get. I can't help it if I'm 200 pounds. I can't help it if I'm 6 feet tall. I've been busting my ass for years, so what if it's not in the square circle? In my last match with Davey, I had to work as a heel, and it was much easier and more fun to get a reaction. He said, now I have to figure out how to get booed in my former hometown. And he says a lot of people have linked him with Matt Riddle, another former UFC fighter who's gone on to the pro independent circuit. But this time he said he's going to be anti-Matt Riddle. And my character is in it for the easy money, not for the love of the sport. And then he starts talking about Japan stuff that's really worked matches, and, you know, they should do more of that type of stuff. And says, I'm not trying to hide anything. Some people look at the suspension and they say, oh, look, he's out there injured and taking shortcuts, but I still don't know where the hell that banned substance came from, and whatever they found wasn't going to be enough to enhance my performance. I don't have the answers. I'm in the same boat as everyone else. And then he said, honestly, I'll go where the money is. That's my number one motivation. I just had my entire career stolen from me, taken from under my own 2 feet. So I don't trust anybody, nor should I. I have to look out for myself, and if that means I step on some toes, that's just part of it. But this is the real meaty stuff. This is where, you know, wrestling, they say, is fake. Well, this is not a fake comment here. This is directly at the UFC, and this is kind of what I was talking about earlier. But very succinctly, he puts a bow on it. He says, UFC is in a holding pattern right now. The morale among fighters is pretty low. A lot of fighters are unhappy. Management is unhappy. The sale was haphazard without a real plan. With talent cuts, office cuts, budget cuts, it's a completely different world. There's a lot of fighters who aren't excited to fight anymore because they see the company is worth billions while they're scraping by in a training camp. It makes it harder to put their health on the line when WME IMG is making so much off them. That's also the idea that, hey, the former owners of Fertitta's and Dana White built this from the ground up, and what they've done for the sport, and the new owners are all Hollywood and don't know shit about MMA. Tom Lawler not even fighting for the UFC right now, squawking. So I think we're in some deep water for the UFC. Let's just say that, you know, it's going to be tough swimming here for a little while to win over these fighters. They're going to have to do something major to change this trend, because it's just like every time I turn around now, I got a new email with 3 or 4 different fighters talking smack about the organization that pays their bills, that provides their paychecks. And I've never seen that before. I don't know whether it was just the Fertittas were different type of people, or they just had that mafia history that scared people into not talking against them. But this has never been like this bad. There's been some fighters here and there, low-level guys, that have been complaining like this, but these are openly guys saying fuck you to the administration of the UFC, and it's just, I love it. I absolutely love it. I don't know if you guys can tell. I want to see more of it. Because the bottom line is these guys, they really do. They're one of the only sportsmen on the face of the earth who their paycheck relies on whether they win. They could double their paycheck if they win.
I see.
And, you know, that never happens in baseball, right? Even, you can't double your paycheck if you win the fight. So, it's just good stuff to see these guys, you know, trying to change the system. The fact that they're all independent contractors, it's just something that makes it very difficult to unionize. And at the same time, it makes the UFC in a better position to abuse these guys because they can under that type of contract. And the same goes for boxing because boxers are no different. They can get bonuses to win as well. And, it just so happens that there's, I think, more paying opportunities for boxing and it's more well known all across the whole world right now than MMA really is. You look at the freaking shit going on in China, Tom. You sent me some links on that. With the martial arts debate against mixed martial arts. They're going ape shit.
The thing I found hilarious about that is traditional martial arts always talk about there's a code and there's honor and respect and discipline. And then all these masters seeing their headmaster exposed and they're going to rat pack the guy that did it. These Tai Chi guys, you know, the one guy... I guess you read the article, or I don't know if you guys read it, but yeah, I guess this self-taught MMA guy took on a deadly no-contact Tai Chi master. And the master got into his praying mantis stance and got punched and taken to the ground, and the fight was over in about 30 seconds. He was a mess. And all the other masters got upset, and then the guy had the nerve to get up and say, well, the reason he won so easy, I didn't use my deadly internal powers on him. Well, that would have killed him. I mean, come on. At some point, and I've been saying this for a couple years now, I think that Taekwondo and Karate have got a little bit of their respect back because we are seeing a little bit more of that in the cage. But at some point, Kung Fu's got to step up. They can't stay in this mystical death by no contact stuff forever. They've got to show something. And they're not doing it. It's just, it's an amazing story. We'll see how that shakes out.
Little do you know, Tom, that whole thing in China was just a preview of Floyd Mayweather versus Conor McGregor. Mayweather's going to be the MMA guy.
We still don't know that's going to happen.
Well, it's so funny, though, that Dana White is out there whining. Well, they stole our date, you know.
What date? Oh, what is he talking about?
That's the only date it can happen.
Nothing was signed. There was no date for that. He acts like that's the only date, and then if I don't have that date, the whole thing's done permanently. I don't buy it.
Yeah.
It's an excuse. That's like, you know, and I'm completely open, like a different topic here, but, you know, say you're a senior in high school, and you know, you're going to go to the prom, and you want to ask, you know, so-and-so. And she's like the head cheerleader, and she's this and that, and she's that. But, you know, if you figure, yeah, if you can do this, you can do that, and you can get this limo, and you can do this, and you can do that, and she'll go to the prom with you. But the problem is, you don't get the tickets. You don't get the limo. You don't get the tux. You don't get any of that. And then somebody else to the prom, it's like, well, they stole my prom date. Well, no, they didn't. You know, no matter what happens, September 16th is going to come and go.
Right.
And every day that passes with no contract and venue and everything being signed and all the legality that's going to be in here and all the little fine points and all that ironed out, every day that that doesn't happen, September 16th gets closer, that there would be no fight that weekend, and that's bullshit, you know?
And you know, Tony, you hit on something else about the legalities. From what I understand, before the Pacquiao fight, Mayweather's money, his legal team, I guess the contract was like 150-some pages of legalese. Can you imagine? This is nuts.
Contract on the gloves. There was the contract on, testing. And it was, I mean, I guess, like, shit with the weigh-ins. And it was everything within that. And then you figure he's going to have not just as much, but more. Now, would McGregor bitch about the gloves? I don't know. Because he's been fighting so many years with MMA gloves. Would it matter if he fought Reyes or Grant or Everlast or whatever? I don't know. Would they make a difference to him? I have no idea. You know, so you might say, the hell with that. But I'm sure there's going to be a... There would be tons of pages there. If he tries this take down move, or if he tries to do a kick in there, or if he
you know that's going to be loaded up. No trickery. You know that.
Because that's what, and I think Rich brought it up a couple weeks ago, was, well, what happens if this happens? And I'm like, well, my estimation, which is only that, an estimation, that there would be a clause in there that he wouldn't get paid.
Yes, sir. Because if Manny had to sign a 150-page contract, this one could be 500 pages.
Yeah, really?
And I still keep going back to the money. I mean, if both guys are getting close to $100 million, I just don't know. I mean, maybe there's something I don't know, but that seems like a pretty big financial mountain to climb.
Yeah.
I don't think Al Heyman has that much on hand. We'll see. I don't know if it's going to happen, but obviously it's not going to happen on that date. hijacked it. Those bastards. Active fighters booking a date. What's wrong with that? Anyway. Big UFC fight, finally. So the MMA drought is over, folks. You can come out of hiding and watch the fights this weekend. May 13th, lucky 13th. Stipe, Tom's buddy, Miocic. That's his nickname, Tom's buddy.
Sure. Yeah, I don't know if you've been catching the embedded, but Stipe's like a big kid. He gets these toys, and I don't know. he's hilarious, but he's ready to go.
Going into a rematch against Junior Dos Santos. Stipe is 16-2. Dos Santos is one of those two losses that he gave him. 18-4 is Dos Santos coming in. And the one I'm looking more forward to is the rematch between Joanna Jędrzejczyk and Jessica Andrade.
Well, hold on. Let's not get past the main event. What does your crystal ball say on that, Rich?
I say Stipe is going to continue this trend of, you know, the leaner, meaner fighter. Kind of like Holyfield did in boxing. And, you know, probably the best example is our favorite fighter from old times, Rocky Marciano, being at 185 pounds in the heavyweight division of boxing.
You're going to see Stipe have that kind of effect. Since the last time they met, Stipe's been on the tear.
Yep.
I mean, he's had four fights, won them all, three of them in the first round, all four by stoppage. And I think they are big, strong heavyweights. One, and you guys know how that game goes. At the heavyweight division, one punch can turn everything around. But it just seems like since then, Junior's had two fights and split them. And I don't know if Junior's ever been the same after that Velasquez trilogy, which ended as bad as it could have for him. I mean, that beating he took in that third fight was, even the second one, that was just a one-sided ass-kicking. And that kind of damage, I don't know. I just don't know if he's the same. So, in that sense, I think Stipe, I'm not saying he's going to stop him, but I think Stipe walks out with the belt.
Well, he's clearly better on his feet. I mean, he took Verdum out with a backpedaling punch, if I remember correctly. And it was just a clip right on the chin. I mean, he's got great hands, and the problem with Junior Dos Santos is if they named a discipline after him, it would be zombie fighting. He has a great chin, but he leaves it open so much that, you know, he ends up drunk fighting, you know, drunken master type shit. And,
well, I'll tell you what, though. It only works so much. It has the potential to be a punch-out as long as it lasts.
Right. But I don't know how many times he can go to the well with that kind of approach, you know?
That's the point.
So I doubt he's going to have a very good chance of winning this fight, especially if Stipe is on point and uses his distance and his range and sets things up. Junior's just going to wing shit at him, and he's going to duck and roll and just throw his counters and the fight with another stoppage. I think it's going to be quicker this time because he doesn't want to go to war with Junior. He doesn't want the drunken guy to set in. He wants to take him out before he can even be drunk. So I think it's going to be a first round knockout for Stipe. That's what I'm going to say. And I primed it to him. How are you going to beat that? Joanna Jędrzejczyk, though, she's in for a tougher battle, I think, with Jessica, because she already knows what she's getting into in this. So I think that's going to be a better fight. But I like Joanna. She's very well-rounded. Very well-rounded. And then the fight we talked about last week, where the champion of this division called this decision by Demian Maia stupid to fight Jorge Masvidal.
Here's the thing. I'm going to invoke a Teddy Atlasism here, and I just seen some quotes by Jorge that he said. Well, he says when we get to the ground, I'm going to show my wrestling and stuff is jujitsu. Now this could be psychological warfare. He could be playing head games, but I think that would be the dumbest thing. But because again, why go into Maya's world? It just wouldn't make sense. And maybe Jorge is so full of himself after this win streak he's been on that he thinks he can do it. And I think if he does, it'll be the end of him. So I'm going with Maya on this one.
Well, Maya will bring you to his world. That's the difference between him and a lot of other guys. Like Verdum will lay on his back and try to lure you in sometimes. But Demian will just, like, drag you down. So I think that's what makes him so effective.
Yeah, and like you said, if Masvidal really wants it on the ground, I think Damian's more than happy to accommodate him.
Yeah.
And we'll see, but I just think that's a crazy fight for Masvidal to fight.
And we also have Frankie Edgar back in action. He's 21-5-1 fighting Yair Rodriguez, who is 10-1. David Branch, also in the lineup, he is 20-3, fighting Christoph Jotko, who is 19-1.
Now, again, stop, Rich. How do you? What's your comments on the Edgar Yair fight? What do you think?
Edgar's getting a little up there in fights and age, and Yair's got just the one loss. So, I mean, I don't know too much about Yair. I haven't seen him.
He's just, his movement is phenomenal. He's just so, he puts everything together so much, and every time I bet against Frankie, I've lost. Yeah. But I'm wondering, and Frankie's a slight favorite in this.
Right.
But I just see Yair is just doing everything right on the money, from training to, his unconventional attacks. So I'm going with the slight underdog in this one.
Rodriguez. Okay. Write that down on your betting slips, folks. You heard it from the psychic.
I gotta have an underdog somewhere.
Got the underdog pick for you. David Branch and Christoph Jotko. And then we got Eddie Alvarez coming in with 28 wins, 5 losses, fighting Dustin Poirier, who is 21-5.
I'd hate to lose that one. Poirier's trying to get back on track, and Eddie really needs a win. Really
need
to win.
Yeah, definitely. And it's we've got some pretty decent undercard fights here. We're only halfway done. We also got Chas Skelly and Jason Knight fighting. They both have 2 losses. Skelly has 17 wins. Knight has 16. And we got a couple guys with 1 loss each. Jared Gordon and Michael Quinones. And Gordon comes in at 12 wins. Quinones comes in with 8. And we got Marco Polo Reyes, who is 7-3, fighting James Vick, who is 10-1. Jessica Aguilar, 19-5, fighting Courtney Casey, who's 6-4. Chase Sherman, 9-3, fighting Rashad Coulter, who's 8-1. And second fight of the night is Gabriel Benitez, 19-5, fighting Enrique Barzola, who's 12-3-1. First fight of the night is Joaquin Christensen, 14-4, fighting Gazimurad Antigulov. Say that 10 times fast. He does not have a show dog picture. He's the only guy in this card. No picture. So, like, I couldn't pronounce his name, never mind find his picture. So that's pretty much most of the stuff I have for this week. You guys got anything else left to add?
No, not much else. I sent you both an email with my with my profile. Hopefully you guys get a kick out of it. I mean,
I got to get busy too. That's got to be tomorrow's project. It's supposed to be this afternoon's, but I got caught up in my writing, so. Tomorrow's another day.
Yes, sir.
Tomorrow's another day. That is correct.
All right. So next week we're going to be on Sports Rants. We're going to have a little clip at the beginning and everything, and it's going to be like new territory for us. But hopefully we can kind of market it in a different way and get some more ears on the broadcast and get some stuff out there. Maybe make a little money at the same time. I don't know. We'll see. Let's see if that works.
Absolutely.
Looking forward to it. We're going to try to get a guest. I'm actually talked to Bermain Stiverne. I sent him a message on a site called Quora. And funny thing about Quora, you know, I think I had mentioned this to Tony already, that I put an answer about Mike Tyson versus Muhammad Ali. And there could be another article for you, because I don't think you ever did that in your fantasy super fights series. Mike Tyson versus Muhammad Ali, who would win? But that's old news. Now, the next question that they were asking me to answer is, who would win in a fight, two bulls or Muhammad Ali? So, yeah, that's how much hyped Muhammad Ali is. But my answer was Tyson. I don't know. I just don't think Muhammad was as good as the media made him out to be. And I think Tyson was just so fierce. I don't think Muhammad Ali's games and head movement, rope-a-dope technique would work on him.
I mean, Tyson was fierce. It's the question on him is, like, you know, would Ali be basically movement and, I don't even say rope-a-dope because he didn't do that till later in his career, but would, you know, Ali's speed, movement, be able to, you know, thwart Tyson. We've determined that Tyson, even in his prime, was not as mentally strong as Smokin' Joe Frazier. So, right. Where Joe could just keep coming. I don't know if Mike could do that.
Right.
It's so mental, because Tyson had a lot of Frazier style, which gave Ali fits. He had the hand speed, you know, he could get in, work the body, get inside, but mentally, if things would start to go wrong, maybe if D'Amato was still in the corner, maybe. But without D'Amato in the corner, I don't know.
Yeah, and the whole thing is, you know, it's going to be in his prime, so it's obviously pre-Buster Douglas.
Yeah. Well, even Jim Jacobs. Jacobs was a part of his team. You know, he wasn't Cus D'Amato, but still, he kept that what Tyson needed.
Right.
And then after he was gone, well, you guys seen the results.
Exactly.
So anyway.
Nothing good.
Yeah.
All right.
Hey, it's one of those fantasy fights that's fun to talk about.
I'll have to, if we can get him, I'll have to ask Bermain Stiverne what he thinks of that one. That's my target guy for next week. But we'll get somebody in. We're going to also put a link. I'm going to record a separate part of the show tonight in the article for our last show, because there's an interview that we did a while back with a guy named James Krause, who is now on The Ultimate Fighter, which we didn't really talk about last hour and a half here. But James Krause won his first fight, and it was supposed to be the first fight on the whole series, but, you know, now he had to wait a few weeks because they purposely picked a guy who was 19 pounds overweight going in to be his opponent. And,
what a disgrace.
So, gamesmanship.
When was James on the show, Rich?
James was on the show just before the UFC sold, because we're going to start out the interview portion from that interview with my commentary on the whole thing being a setup of the bid system, you know, asking for bids, and you know that they're just gonna hype the price up. But, you know, hindsight being 2020 now, it sounds like I'm the psychic. It was a setup, but this was just before the sale became official. And James actually gets into some stuff. I kind of try to trap him like I always do the MMA fighters in the UFC to, you know, trash the administration a little bit, but he doesn't do it. On the outset, it sounds like he doesn't do it. You know, it sounds like he's sticking up for them, but if you kind of listen a little bit, he really is slamming them, you know, for being all about the, you know, the selling tickets and, you know, the super fight stuff, and he stands up for McGregor in a weird way, but, you know, at the same time, it's like biting criticism, you know what I mean? So it's an interesting interview, looking back on it, and especially where we talked about guys like Tom Lawler and, Luke Rockhold, just basically used some four-letter words and, you know, just criticizing the UFC left and right, even while they're under contract. It hasn't happened in a long time. So James Krause saying this stuff, and then now he's on the Ultimate Fighter and doing well. It's just kind of crazy. But both of you guys asked him a lot of questions too, and did some back and forth with him. So we're going to play about 20 minutes of that interview on a just separate clip and put it on the blog with this episode. I mean, he did a pretty good job in his fight, except for, you know, he did not use his hands up very much. He kind of tried to do a defense with, like, a face roll rather than a shoulder roll. I don't know if you noticed that, Tom, but every time he got punched by Johnny Nunes, he just kind of moved his face back rather than try to push away with his hand or anything like that. He was not very hands up, and you could tell he was heavy on the kicks. He was looking for kicks a little too much, and he did very well with the knees when he had the chance too, but I think he needs to work a little bit on his parrying and catching, right, Tony?
Yeah. Those
key boxing skills you need to have.
Yeah. You never know how important the parry is.
Oh, yeah.
I was talking to Amy about that last night. How I learned how to, like, do that was by, as I said it before, being put in a corner. And jabs and then eventually straight right hands are coming at you. And you parry, or, you know, you're getting hit. And, you know, you learn how to move your head. Last night, I actually had, at the end of my workout, I had Amy put the pads on for me at half speed, you know, because she'd never done it before. So when I first threw my first jab right hand at her, she was kind of catching them soft. I said, no, what you got to do is you got to stiff it. Like, basically like a catcher, you know, crouch down, home plate. That ball comes, you stiff it, and you catch it. I said, basically the best way I do it, I was telling her, I said, I'm going to throw a hook, a right hand, and a hook at you. And I said, you want to come and you want to just kind of meet me and block your wrist. And I'm like, hook, right, hook, boom, boom, boom. And she was picking it up pretty good. So I was proud of her. And but that's a big part of the game.
And I've said it before too, I think it's the kicking. Because from taking a little karate, I do know that when your toe kicks, you know, you kind of, they have your hands way up or way low, depending on what type of kick. So I think that fucks with a lot of guys' heads who are trying to mix the two. So, I don't know. But the hands up thing is so important. I mean, it's only your chin that's really going to knock you the fuck out. This guy hits you with a killer leg kick that breaks your leg like what happened to a rubber chicken leg Anderson Silva there once. But, your hands aren't going to help you in that situation anyway, though. Maybe to the body, but I don't know. Crazy stuff. So, James Krause, yeah. It was a crazy interview. It was good stuff. And it's very hindsight 2020, looking back. So we're going to play a little portion of that. Pretty much the whole thing. I think it was only like 25 minutes. On the blog entry for this one, and we're going to talk about all the UFC and a little bit of boxing this weekend. UFC is taking over just for the weekend. Boxing is still winning, Tony. UFC is the biggest.
Yeah, try to get that Krause interview recorded. I'd like to hear that one myself.
Yeah, we're gonna post it right with this, and then I will send you guys the link to this one. We'll market it
cool. As
part of our introduction to the first show on Sports Rants. Maybe they listened to the last show on FNU alone. But all right, till next week, guys. Thanks for stopping by.
All right, guys. Remember my crystal ball. It's been tested to the max. We'll see how polished it is. See if I still have that touch. All right, guys. Next week, enjoy the fights.
Hopefully, all of your predictions but one.
And I'm hoping I'm wrong.
Vegas.